Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar, and I'm joined with Julie Fudge-Smith today. And we are going to be talking about puppy nipping because we got an email that said, I don't know if you take requests. I was looking for a podcast about puppies chewing on people and how to stop it ASAP. And she says that she's made some good progress on sleeping through the night and house training, though they're still working on that. But the nipping is really causing a problem in Sheila's household. So, Julie, that's a pretty common problem, isn't it? What do you tell people?
Tell them to get rid of the dog.
Never the right answer.
No, it's never the right answer. Well, anyway, no, I don't tell them that. But it is very, very common. And I think that it's what people are most surprised about, I think there's two things that really surprise them about puppy nipping, is how quickly it starts, how intense it can be, right? And it hurts. Those are really needle-sharp teeth. And they're really kind of startled, and some of them are very hurt by it. They feel like, but I love this dog. Why is he doing this to me? Their feelings are hurt, so that kind of masks, you know, what they do about this. So I find that that's a common one. But what I tell people is that, you know, dogs don't have opposable thumbs. What they have are mouths, and that's how they explore the world. And it's important for them to understand how to use their mouth. It's not that you can't use your mouth. I want you to use it appropriately. So it's real important to let our dogs explore the world. We just have to help them understand the right way to do it. So one of the first things I tell people is that, at least I notice with my puppy, is that the nipping gets worse the more excited the puppy gets. So one of the things I try to do is, as I see the puppy starting to escalate in play, that's when I try to calm things down. That's when I will stand up. That's when I'll have them do a sit. I'll redirect them to a toy so that we don't get to the part where the puppy spills over into so much excitement I can't help but bite harder. So one thing is beginning to recognize when your dog is starting to amp up and to circumvent that by helping them to amp back down. Can you amp down? I don't know.
We're going to say that you can.
Okay. Calm down. You amp up and you calm down. I'm just going to ponder on that amp thing for a while. Anyway, so that's one thing, is to be able to recognize when your dog is starting to get to that point where you think he's going to lose control.
And that piece right there of you intervening as the puppy amps up and then helping to bring the puppy down also starts to teach the puppy, when I start feeling this way, that I would like to calm back down.
Right.
So being able to self-regulate is more of an adult skill, but this helps puppies to kind of guide them in the direction of being able to self-calm in the future.
Right. And that's just, you know, it's, I find that with children. Children, you know, that's something that kids have to learn too, is a little bit of impulse control here. One of the things that I really find to be the most effective, though, is to make sure that you have plenty of appropriate things for a dog to chew on. Lots of toys and chew toys and Kongs and Nylabones and all kinds of things, so that as the puppy begins to, I'm going to bite, oh no, here, why don't you chew on this toy instead of me? So I'm always trying to redirect the dog to something that's much more appropriate. Now, last times we did a question and answer, and we talked about trading. And so that's another thing you can do in some ways, is that as the dog starts chewing on me or chewing on a shoe that I don't want you to chew on, I'm going to redirect you to something that's appropriate. So it's a form of trading. Yeah, we're going to trade my hand for this chew toy.
Yes.
And I try to keep a nice stock of them all over the place. And most puppies are confined, like our Burner right now. He can come out of the kitchen and he can come upstairs, but we keep him gated in the kitchen most of the time. And that's where the vast majority of his toys are right there, so that I always have something that I can redirect him to.
So yeah, that's an important piece, having something nearby that you can redirect the puppy to. So to being prepared, sometimes it's a little bit of thinking ahead, because if the only thing that you've got that your puppy wants to chew is two floors away in their toy basket, then you're kind of in a bad spot in this moment of puppy nipping. So having easy access to appropriate things for the puppy to chew, it's really important for us to keep in mind they need to chew.
Yes.
They must chew. They will chew. So we need to give them appropriate outlets for it. The other piece where you were saying earlier about the behavior, you know, just sort of getting worse and the control going down, I think we can think about that with kids too. And honestly, adults, that if we're too hungry, if we're too tired, if we're too overwhelmed, if we're too whatever, we lose our ability to regulate and have control. So even a puppy that's learning to be more gentle will be less gentle in times when he is too tired or too hungry or too whatever. And too tired is a really important thing. I think people don't realize how much sleep puppies need. So if a redirection doesn't work very quickly, then I often go, well, clearly it's nap time. So you'll have a little break and you will have some downtime and we'll come back together, because we love puppies and we want to play with puppies and yay, there's a puppy here. Yay, 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 yay. Stimulation, stimulation. We're all so thrilled. Like, that was so amazing. It was wonderful. It was too much. And then we're all ending it on a bad note. So always leave them wanting something more is a really good rule of thumb for any sort of activity with a puppy, or definitely with kids and dogs.
Yes, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. One of the things that I was reading somewhere that, you know, dogs need an average of like 16 hours of sleep a day. Yeah.
They really, so much more than people think.
Yeah, they really do. So I think that's good. Another thing that I also recommend is that in order to teach your dog what is appropriate as far as is to hand feed your dog. Do that a couple of times a week so that the dog understands that, one, food comes from you. It's part of the bonding experience. But the other thing is that he learns to be gentle with your hand. You can feed it on a flat hand, but he needs to understand that food comes from you and he needs to be gentle with your hand. So that's a good way to teach a puppy how to be careful with you. Go ahead.
Puppies who have siblings tend to do a little bit better with puppy nipping than puppies who are raised as singletons.
Absolutely.
Because they get a lot of feedback from their siblings. But one important difference is that their siblings were covered with fur. And fur is an amazing protective layer when we're talking about those little sharp needle teeth. And they need to learn that we're covered with wimpy human skin and we don't have that lovely protective layer of fur. So what your puppy is biting you, the intensity with which your puppy is biting you, is probably a level that another puppy would tolerate.
Right.
And
right.
They don't know yet that it is not a level that humans will tolerate, because they've sort of learned, oh, you can bite this hard and then someone will still play with you, or you bite that hard and they won't. And they need to learn that for people, it's a whole nother level down of, oh, you can't bite that hard on people because they won't play with you then.
Right. And actually, that brings me to another point that I also say, too, is that if the puppy does bite you too hard, that's it. Everything's done. You're right. You need to, just like a puppy will say, ow, that really hurts and I don't want to play with you, I'm walking away. You can do the same thing. If your puppy hits you too hard, let out with it. Ow! And everything stops. All good things stop. I will walk away from you. Now, I'm not saying walk away for hours on end. You can walk away for a minute or two. And then as the puppy goes, oh, my goodness, Julie is so fragile. She really is just terribly fragile. They should come back a little bit softer. And then you can keep doing that until the point you think it's appropriate, the way in which your dog is touching your hand or your pant leg or whatever. Yeah. And that's the other one I get. Do you get this a lot? He grabs my pant legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it fights back. Because as you pull your leg away, the pant leg starts shaking, and it's basically a giant tug toy attached to your body. And the dog is so happy.
Yes.
So happy.
So what do you tell people to do about the pant leg problem?
I tell them to freeze so that the pant leg stops playing so much, and then we intervene. If your puppy knows a cue, then we could give a cue. But normally there, I try to do a trade or something. But the big, big thing is don't be shaking your left leg to get the puppy to stop chewing on your left pant leg, because it's just such a fun, fun game.
Yeah. The other thing I will do, too, is I will tell people, you don't seem to realize, but did you know that your pant legs or your skirts have nerve endings? And so that if your puppy grabs your pant leg, you can yelp just the same way you mm-hmm. would do if he were to grab your hand. It's just people don't realize their pant legs have nerve endings.
Yeah, they forget that.
Yeah.
And the yelping piece, I think, is interesting. It doesn't work for every dog.
It works
for many, many, many. But for some, it either makes them crazy or they just really could care less. But when we're talking about moment of you win or you lose, you win, we still play, you lose, I end this. We never want to have the moment where I'm mad at you. And that can be difficult because if a puppy nips you and it hurts, for many of us, the immediate response is, you know, don't you bite me. And we want to come at the puppy. It's a really common human response to pain. So be very aware of that, because that is not instructive and it doesn't build your relationship. It doesn't help and it doesn't teach the puppy how to regulate in any way. So it definitely wants you to yelp and move away, but not yell at the puppy or, you know, wonk him on the nose or castigate him in any way, because that is not going to, it's not going to improve anything. Punishment makes the punisher feel better, but it doesn't really teach.
That's right. And one of the things you don't want to do is terrify the dog either. So I don't use shake cans or spray bottles or noisemakers or anything else, because we don't want to develop a noise phobia, which we also talked about a couple times ago, that if you develop a noise phobia in your dog, then there's an awful lot of work to counter-condition it and probably will never be completely counter-conditioned. So you don't want to.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is what are you actually teaching the dog?
Yes.
Right? Because if you use the dog bites you, you use a noisemaker, is the dog learning the lesson you think he's going to learn? Is he actually learning that if I use my teeth too hard, there's this scary noise? He might learn, we're playing, and then dad or mom uses this noise or he yells at me. They may not be making the association you want them to make. So punishment has to be is just really iffy here.
Yeah, it's very, very tricky. So when we're looking at chewing, there are a couple important things to keep in mind about puppy nipping. First being that they are needle-sharp teeth. They are so sharp, and they are meant to be so sharp. I mean, they are meant to be sharp so that a puppy can actually puncture into a little bit of meat. And guess what? That's what your hand is, a little bit of meat right there. Yep, you can puncture. The nice thing is adult teeth are not that sharp because the jaws are stronger and the connection into the teeth into the jaw is also stronger. So we have actually two puppy teething periods.
Right.
The first, when the puppy's teeth are beginning to fall out so the adult ones can come in, and then the second, when they're sort of hardening into the jaw.
Right.
So
right.
What happens for a lot of people is they're a little bit surprised by the chewing that occurs in that second stage. But
yes.
If we've taught the puppy really well in this puppy nipping stage, which we're really focusing more on the puppy being inappropriate with people, so not so much the pain in the jaw issue, that will help the puppy to be more gentle and more appropriate. But we do need to keep in mind this is driven by sensation in their body. They're feeling this need.
Absolutely. And I would tell you, too, with the second phase, that's when I lose a piece of furniture. I don't normally lose a piece of furniture. I don't have a kitchen chair not on in the first, but I always manage to. So I'm like, oh, man, that's right. We're headed into the second phase, which is around 8-9 months of age.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's when I lose the rung on a chair. Is because
and it's always because the dog is starting to do really pretty well.
Yeah,
and,
hey,
like, look, he's getting so grown up, and oh, it's okay.
We can leave him out. It's not a problem. Well, yeah, it is. So, yeah, that's something to keep in mind. Is those two phases. And the other thing is, I think Ian Dunbar talks about this. If you go to his website, Dogstar Daily, he talks a lot about puppy mouthing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think is really incredibly important to understand, and we touched on this at the beginning, is that your dog needs to learn how to use his mouth, not to not use his mouth.
Right.
Because if you try to repress that behavior, you try to stop him from using his mouth, that's just not going to work, because that's how dogs explore the world.
Right.
And so if you try to repress that, if you try to punish that, if you try to get the dog to stop using his mouth, at some point he's going to have to use his mouth and it's going to come out without any kind of bite inhibition, which is right. What we're really trying to teach is appropriate bite inhibition. And mm-hmm. if you can teach the bite inhibition, then if your dog, because every dog has the capacity to bite as an adult, right, even as a puppy, but if you've taught good bite inhibition, then the likelihood of it being a serious bite decreases dramatically. And that's one Absolutely. Of the things we're really aiming for here is appropriate use of a mouth, bite inhibition, but not stopping to use your mouth because you're going to use your mouth. You just are. So
right.
you have
so we
to
give
the
them
reality.
Lots and lots and lots of practice at being appropriate.
Right, right.
And frequently with puppies, that means we have to start with the bites that really hurt.
Yes.
And then work down to the ones that hurt some, and then work down to the ones that are a little bit obnoxious, and then work down to the ones that are just like, okay, we really wouldn't like that, but it didn't hurt. And then we get to appropriate mouthing. Because if we just start with all the way down at the beginning, what we may teach the puppy is, I don't like it when you use your mouth, and they need to use their mouth. So
right.
we need to say, I don't like it when you use your mouth too hard, and start our criteria way up there at the far end, and then help the puppy gradually ease the scale down.
Right. And, you know, I tell families, I say, you know, it's really up to you to decide the level of appropriateness. Some people mm-hmm. in families really don't want dog teeth on human skin under any circumstances.
Yes.
So that's what you need to train down to. Others, they don't mind if their dog, like, holds their hand in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's also fine if you've got the appropriate, you know, bite inhibition and level of control. But you have to make a conscious decision as to,
yes.
to what that appropriate level is going to be in your household.
What and is the appropriate level in your household?
That's a really good question. If it's just Brad and I, then I don't mind if my dog holds my hand in his or her mouth. But because I have grandchildren living here, no teeth on skin.
Mm-hmm. But licking is okay?
Licking is just fine.
Because there are people who want to eliminate even that. You know,
yes.
there's the whole scale that includes even that.
No, I can't. I have two very licky-faced dogs. This is just... let's put it this way. I'm an innately lazy trainer. And for me to try and to eliminate any licking from either Zuzu or Little Bear would mean that would be all I'd be doing all day long. So, and that's fine. And because Zuzu is a little bit of a nervous individual, she needs an outlet. She needs mm-hmm. to be able to do something with her mouth because that's the way in which she expresses some of that nervousness. She has a little bit we call her chatter cheeks. She when she gets kind of nervous and excited to see you, her teeth chatter as if she's cold.
Mm-hmm.
She never puts her teeth on you when she does that. But as she starts to come out of that teeth chattering, then she needs to lick. And I need to give her an appropriate way to respond to me to come out of that. Because if I just didn't give her any way to express that, I think it would be, I would just drive her into more anxiety. So, no, we do a lot of licking. How about your house? What's the rule with Enzo?
Licking is fine and very gentle tooth contact, like with a toy or with an interaction is
right.
fine, but not a holding. Like if you were to want my attention, you could nudge under my hand with a muzzle, but not, you know, use a tooth to move me.
Right.
That would sort of be the line that I have. And that's pretty much the line I've always had with my dogs for all of my dogs. But it is a distinction. It is something that you have to consciously think about what is allowed and what is not allowed, because you'll find people don't have any idea of what they think. And then sometimes they're inconsistent on what that is. And how's the dog learning what's okay and what's not okay until
right.
you decide that.
Well, I've always had, when you said the nudging, we've always had a lot of nudgers in this house.
Yeah.
And I don't know
and some don't like, I mean, some people hate the nudging and I'm like, well, it's kind of cute.
Yeah. We get with, hey, you, hey, you. Okay, you. It's kind of like, okay, that I can, yeah. And so I don't know if, I don't think I've actually consciously taught that, but I know I have consciously reinforced that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, oh, hi there. Yeah, you nudge me, I recognize you. which is exactly what you want. So I'm reinforcing that. So we don't have to escalate to barking or nipping or, you know, anything else, because that nudge has worked to get your attention. And I think that's another thing to keep in mind, too, is you have to work with the dog you have. Like, Zuzu's a licker, and I've had all these nudgers all my life. But if you don't find that to be an appropriate way, what is an appropriate way for your dog to get your attention? Do you want your dog to bark at you? Do you want your dog to pull on your pant leg? So think about what it is. We talked a little bit about growling, that if your dog growls and you punish it, you're going to extinguish the growl and it probably won't come back. If your dog is nudging you and you're not paying attention and then goes to pulling on your clothes and that's where you pay attention, that's probably what he's finding to be effective. So it's important to think about, wow, what am I maybe inadvertently teaching my dog is the way in which he needs to pay attention to me or get my attention.
Right. And I think it's absolutely fair for a dog to request our attention. There are certainly times that we can't do something, you know, like we're both podcasting right now and our dogs are off duty. You know, mine's laying here feeling very sad that I'm ignoring him. But the idea being he has the right to say, hello, how about now? And I have the right to say maybe now or maybe not now. Sometimes when you hear people talk about dog training stuff, it's very one directional. That the dog needs to be ready and paying attention to me at any time I request the dog's attention. And any time I am not requesting the dog's attention, he needs to be not bothering me in any way. And that's not a relationship.
No.
That's an appliance. That's, you know, my washer does not take up any amount of my mental attention when I'm not doing laundry. But when I want laundry, it better be ready.
Yes.
So I think it's something to be really conscious of in family dog stuff is that if your puppy is nipping or barking or nudging or any of these things, what's the real message there? Is the message, I want to interact with you, and then we can look at how to do that more appropriately? Or is the message, my teeth hurt? Or is the message, I need to go out? But they have a right to give us messages, and we need to listen.
Right. And I have the number of people say to me, why doesn't he tell me he needs to go out? Well, maybe he is. You're just not picking up on that message. And so I think that the more you establish open lines of communication between you and your dog, the more you're going to pick up on when they are telling you those things. I was really surprised a few years ago when somebody said to me, how do you teach the dog to tell you they want to go out? And I thought to myself, that's not a problem I have. So why is that I don't have that problem? And I think it comes from, you know, having that open line of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And paying attention to, you know, when we talked about house training, paying attention to my dog's body language.
Right.
And reinforcing them for giving me clear body language. And you know, reinforcing them when they're at the back door, I open the back door and we go out in the yard. So
we veered off a little bit from nipping, but that's how we do.
that's how we roll. But on the other hand, we didn't. Because what this all boils down to is paying close attention to your dog and teaching them an appropriate way to communicate with you. And that's going to be one of the ways in which you're going to begin to get control over that puppy nipping is by paying attention to when he starts to escalate. Paying attention that maybe when he's hungry, maybe he needs to go out, maybe he needs a rest. So figuring out, just like you do with your baby doesn't come out telling you, hey, mom. You know, you have to learn to read your baby. You need to learn to read your baby dog. And if you do that and are providing for him those things that he needs, then he's going to be less inclined to use an extreme form of nipping or other things to let you know what he wants or that he needs to play. So, yes, we did veer, but it's all related. It all goes back to relationship.
It does. That's pretty much what all of our podcasts are about. Relationship, relationship, relationship.
Relationship, that's right.
So, but I think that pretty much summed it up really well there, Julie. I think you did a great job wrapping up. So is there anything else you think we should add to our puppy nipping one, or should we end on that note?
Well, I think we can end on that note. One thing I think we will put on the show notes is I do have a handout that's called Puppy Nipping Do's and Don'ts. And I start out with the do's because I think it's much more important to focus on the positive.
I agree.
And I was looking at this. One of the things that two things that we did not talk about that I think are important that I wanted to throw in real quick is be a treat. Mm-hmm. So that if, which you kind of touched on, if somebody grabs your pant leg, you stop moving, you be a tree, you're going to be a lot less interesting, and we might just let go because you're not interacting, and that's kind of boring. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is if you have a clicker, what I found has been really great is just to click and treat for appropriate use of his mouth. I had a really nippy puppy in a class one time, and every time he touched me in an appropriate way, I clicked and gave him a treat. By the end of class, he was not nipping at my fingers at all. So I think if you are clicker savvy at all, that's another thing, is remember to continually reward the desirable behavior. Yes. And why try to redirect away from the undesirable behavior. And then I have a list of don'ts, but we're not going to go over those. We're just going to stay on the positive today.
So, but that, they'll all be linked to in the show notes.
That's right. They'll be linked on the show notes. And on that are under resources are three different links you can go to. Two articles at clickertraining.com on surviving puppy teething and nipping, and a nice little handout called How to Handle Puppy Nipping with Compassion. So that will all be on the show notes, and that's all on one page, my puppy nipping do and don'ts, with the links on the bottom of that page. So
sounds good.
I think that's good. I think that pretty much wraps it up. I hope that our listener got something out of that she can use.
Yep. Hopefully Sheila and her puppy will be in better state.
That's right. All right. Thanks, Colleen. We'll see you next week.
Okay. See you then.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.